Ocean City. What's happening? My name's James. I'm an addict. I got to start off by saying this is fantastic to see a bunch of addicts together on a Friday night not getting high. That's impressive. You know? Thank you for taking the time to show up and not only support your recovery, support mine and support everybody else's. Because I know that I cannot do this alone. I need you. I need every one of you in my life. Because I thought I had all the answers once upon a time. I thought I knew exactly what I was doing. I thought I didn't have a problem. I thought I was a social user. You know, I had a lot of great ideas. You know, I was a master of my own domain. You know, I was somehow going to retire rich. I had no plan how to do that, but it was going to happen. You know, I was going to have all the drugs I needed, but I never really thought about how I would get them, but I was going to have them. You know, I was going to have everything I wanted. I had absolutely no plan, was not willing to work to do that. So, needless to say, I'm just grateful today to be standing here and to be able to participate in service. So here I am speaking on surviving our feelings and victim or volunteer. So as I already said, I'm an addict. You know, there's a line in the basic text that says we live to use and use to live. And that describes my addiction. You know, I didn't realize it at the time, but my life just revolved around drugs. It's all I thought about. It's like I was employable. I always had a job, and I had that job because I needed money, because I needed to get high, because that's what I did, you know? So I had a lot of misconceptions, you know? I always felt it's just like, I'm not an addict, and, you know, I got a job. I don't stick needles in my arms, you know? But I was really wrong, you know? Feelings are a double-edged sword, you know. Feelings are what brought me in, and feelings are also what took me out. It's kind of interesting, you know. It's almost like a paradox, you know. Go back to, you know, my childhood. You know, all growing up, it's like a lot of the major, like, emotions and feelings I had, you know, were fear, anxiety. I never felt like I was good enough. I always doubted my capabilities. I always believed that, you know, someone else is better. I was never number one. I was probably more like number 67 or maybe down in the triple digits or something like that. You know, I had no self-esteem. And, like, you know, I got by. You know, I wasn't popular. I didn't care. You know, I wanted to be. I wanted people to like me. I desperately, you know, wanted to have, like, a lot of friends. But I had a couple, and I was happy for that. I had parents who loved me, you know, but part of me, like, just didn't believe it. Somehow, I have no clue how this happened, but I started to equate stuff with love. So it's just like, you know, my parents gave me stuff. It's just like, oh, they love me. You know, but simple hugs and, like, I love you or, like, good job, that didn't mean anything. So from a very young age, like, I got addicted to this whole concept of just, like, more is better. Yes, more is freaking awesome. It's like, I want more. It's like, you know, from a very young age, it's just like, you know, I started, like, pinching pennies and change off my dad's dresser because money's cool. Money allows me to get more stuff. You know, I don't know what I need, but it's like, if I can get more money and I don't have to do anything, yeah, that makes perfect sense, you know? Or, you know, then came the lies and more stealing. And eventually, you know, I started one of the most abusive relationships of my life. Yes, I found drugs, and they were exactly what I was looking for. You know, I started off simple, and as everything kind of progressed and went downhill, I found bigger, better, badder things, you know. But it was like this, it was like a romance. It's like I couldn't stop thinking about it. You know, it's like I was hooked, I was in love. It's just like it gave me everything I needed to feel. Nothing. You know, I mean, it's true. It's like I just the euphoria, you know, just it was perfect. It was exactly what I was looking for, or at least that's what I thought. It filled the void that I felt inside of myself that I wasn't good enough for anybody. So what did I do? I got high. It made perfect sense for me. You know, it's like, fuck it. Who cares? It's like, I feel good. That's all that matters. And it's like, people wanted to be around me when I had drugs. That was cool. That's what I wanted. I wanted to be, you know, around people. You know? And I thought I was endorsing and buying into one of the greatest things life had to offer. You know? And you know, looking back, if you would have asked me, it's just like, you know, are you ever going to stop using drugs? No way. Too much fun. You know? And it was fun for a while, but fun only lasts for so long. You know? It's kind of funny, you know, how denial was really strong for me. You know, I remember talking about this recently, like being able to like look back, and the whole time, like things would get worse. You know, start off with one arrest, you know, it started off, and you know, then there was another one, you know, and then there was not having money, there was caught getting, you know, stealing, and like the whole time, like, you know, like the perfect like optimist. I'm like, it's not that bad, you know. It's like I look back and I think, you know, it's like, if my ass was on fire, I would have turned around and be like, huh, I wonder if I'm going to get burned, where a normal person would be like, what the fuck are you doing? Stop, drop, and roll! You know? But I mean, it's just like, there's just so much denial. No, man, it's not that bad. It'll put itself out, you know? And that's where my mind was. I couldn't see things for what they really were. Reality, my reality was so distorted because I didn't want to live in reality. I had no desire to face the facts. And the facts were, I was and I am an addict. You know? When I finally came into NA, and I don't necessarily know if I came willingly, I basically came because I didn't want to go to jail, and I kind of wanted to make the probation officer be like, oh, look, he's going through the motions. You know, the whole fake it till you make it. But by the time I came to NA, like when I look back, you know, some of the only things I can say I was good at was I was good at spending money. I was good at not telling the truth or lying or trying to make you believe I was something I was not. I was really, really good at getting high. Like I never discriminated against drugs. You know, if you had something new, I'd say, sure, why the heck not? You know, I would do it. Yeah, especially if it's free. I love free. Oh my gosh, give me a hit of that, I'll take it. And probably, you know, I was probably the best carpet cleaner possible. I could hand pick a carpet clean better than any other person, I guarantee it. I don't know how many hours I wasted of my life crawling around the carpet floor looking for one more. And there are many times I wound up tragically disappointed when I accidentally put pretzel salt in there, bread crumbs, or cat litter. You know, it's even worse. It's just like when you go back for another one. It wasn't. There's the whole victim aspect. I can't really call myself a victim because I did it to myself. I thoroughly also believe I used to be a victim of circumstance. You know, it's like I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. You know, it's just like if the cop wasn't there, you know, I wouldn't have gotten pulled over. You know, fucking cop. Yeah, it's the cop's fault, you know. He's just, you know, let's get off that topic. So, when I came to NA, what I knew about feelings was completely absurd. As I already said, like, I associated with love, you know, with stuff. So, I mean, it's just like, oh, yeah, you know, it's like, of course I know what love is, you know. It's like, if you have sex with me, you love me, you know what I mean? You know, if you give me stuff, you love me, you know, and unfortunately, the other part of coming in is I felt really inadequate, confused, and scared. You know, I didn't want to admit it, but I mean, it's like, I had no clue why people wanted to come up and give me a hug. I had no clue why people wanted to invite me out afterwards or do stuff with me. It was really intimidating. It was in a room with a bunch of like fucked up, creepy people, you know, and they're just like, they want to kind of be my friend, and I'm just like, I don't know about you guys. You guys you guys aren't like me, you know, I can't, like, you know, imagine that you guys, like, did the stuff that I did. So, simple thinking right there, you know. But, I mean, I couldn't get past the fact that it's just, like, I felt so low. I think I heard one person refer to it as feeling as low as whale shit, you know. I mean, that resonated when I heard that, you know. I mean, that's exactly how I felt. I was like, I am good for nothing, you know. It's just like, and all I wanted to do was belong. And you know what saved my life is people allowed me to belong. People gave me hugs. They opened up and they said, yeah, sure, come on. The seat's for you. You've earned it. I was like, I earned it. What did I do? You showed up. I never really realized how hard it was, you know, to show up. Sometimes it's not easy. Sometimes, you know, I want to sit at home and watch Netflix. Sometimes, you know, I want to say, fuck it, I don't want to. You know, it's hard sometimes to show up for yourself, even though I know that it'll save my life. It might even save someone else's, but I'm so self-centered that sometimes I just can't even do that. You know, I'm not perfect. I'm a work in progress, you know, but the fear, the anxiety that I felt when I first came into the rooms, it started to pass. And all because I just showed up, because I talked to people, because I got to get to know people, you know, because I decided, you know, I was going to try, get a sponsor, you know, show up before the meetings, hang out afterwards, get a service position. God, I remember the first service position I had was, you know, making coffee and setting up the meeting. And I was like, you know, some of the most fun times I've ever had, you know. It's like, look at me, I'm responsible, wow, you know. It's like people trust me to do stuff, you know. I mean, it was a little exhilarating to be like, wow, people trust me, get out, you know. It's just like, to a normal person, they're like, who cares? You're setting up chairs. To me, I'm like, yeah, look what I'm doing. It's the delusions of grandeur again. Anywho. It's been an amazing journey, you know. There's been ups, downs, twists, and turns. And the only thing I think I've really done right consecutively is not get high one day at a time, you know. I hear about stuff where people are just like, oh, you shouldn't do that, you shouldn't do that, this, that, you know, whatever. I'm like, well, it's not using drugs. I could do that, you know. There's that brilliant thinking again. You know, what chapter is it in? I think it's in What Can I Do? You know, where it talks about our best thinking in the basic text, What Can I Do? And it reminds me of a story at work, you know. I'm a nurse, I work in a hospital, and coming into work one night, going around meeting the patients, and the first guy's room I walk into, I'm like, oh, God, this is going to be a night. There's a guy strapped down in four-point restraints. And I look at him, I was like, dude, this guy looks like Long Duck Dong from the Breakfast Club. He's just like, you know, this is going to be kind of interesting. And, like, immediately he starts yelling at me. He's like, hey, I have just one question for you. Like, he's not moving his arm or pointing at me, but anyways. Hey! And I know exactly what he's going to say to me. I'm like, all right, I know what you're going to say. Why won't you let me out of these restraints? Completely wrong. He says, why are you so stupid? And, you know, it got me thinking. It's just like, he's right. Why am I so stupid? And I don't mean this as, like, you know, like low self-esteem. It's like, you know, I kind of had this, like, profound thought. It's just like, you know, I could tell him about, you know, what's wrong, you know, what's wrong with the patient. It's like, oh, his behavior's changed because he's got damage in his frontal lobe of his brain from a stroke. You know, I could tell him about that. Yeah, but that's out of a textbook. That doesn't mean anything. Anybody can read out of a textbook, you know. But, I mean, I really don't know that much. I only know what I've been taught through this program, basic principles. And when I'm not following, you know, my spiritual principles, I seem to revert back to very simplistic thoughts and feelings. Instant gratification. What's free? How can I accomplish my goal with doing the least work possible? If I wait 3 more minutes and punch out from work, I'm going to get paid for an extra 15 minutes. Fuck yeah! You know? I mean, it's tragic, but that whole concept of more, you know, more is never enough. I mean, it's not enough for me. And I do the best I can, and I still find little flaws in my life. And I'm not perfect. I'm a work in progress, you know? It's true, we all are. And that's what inspires me to keep coming back one day at a time. Because when I see someone else struggling with something that I might be struggling with, I'm like, well, how are you doing that? How are you getting through? You know? It's like, how can you help me? You know, it's a we program. My best thinking, you know, led me to hang out in the bathroom, peeping out the windows, because I was afraid the cops were coming for me. And I don't even know why the cops would be coming for me. But I was damn sure that they were coming for me. Every few seconds, it's like peeping out the window. It's just like, were those brake lights or were those the lights from a cop car? I don't know. Who knows? Jesus. I mean, it's like, it's the repetition of insanity. I mean, you know, it states in the basic text, insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. And I don't know if I expected different results, but I sure as hell was under, like, the impression that all of a sudden, one day, things are just going to get magically better. I didn't think I was going to have to put any work into it. You know, boy, was I wrong. Things get better. Things get better. You know. So, what have I done to stay clean, you know? As I said, like, the first 18 months of my recovery were awesome. You know, I had, like, my life was like, went to work, went to the gym, went to a meeting, went to bed. Every day I had this awesome cycle of repetition, you know? And, it was great. It was structure. It was like, it was the simplest structure ever. It's just like, do this, do that, take a nap, do it all over again. It's just like, it was like programmed into my brain. It's like, I didn't require any thought. It was just like, do this, you know, it was great. Because my thinking, you know, when I started to think for myself, I started to screw things up royally. So it was so much easier just to follow this little strict plan. And then, you know, I had an opportunity to go back to school. And, you know, I took it up. I moved to a different area, and I started doing the same thing, you know. Went to meetings, this time instead of work, went to school, got to know people, you know, socialized. And, you know, it kind of became this trend. And unfortunately, the one thing I still struggle with today is, as life progresses and as recovery progresses, there's this crap called responsibility, which just keeps piling up. And it's just like, as much as I keep shoveling it away, it just keeps piling up. And I'm like, oh my gosh, what have I gotten myself into? I think that the meeting next door was talking about, you know, being a productive member of society. Being a productive member of society is great, you know, but damn, it comes with a lot of responsibility. And sometimes I don't always want to be responsible. I still look at myself as like a small child, you know. Using drugs stunted my ability to grow up. It's just like, I feel like, you know, like, sometimes in recovery, I feel like Peter Pan. It's just like, you know, I'm going back to Never Neverland. You know, it's like, I don't want responsibility. I don't want to be around parents or anything like that, you know? But it's that mindset, you know, of like living in the past, which is not healthy for me. The responsibility is good because it makes me show up for reality. Reality is not always pleasant for me. Going through painful things in recovery and coming out clean is one of the most reinforcing facts for me that I'm doing the right thing and that this is the right way to do it. You know, one thing I talk about every now and then, but I don't talk about it too much is, you know, everything in my life, you know, was going fantastically smooth. And then, every year, you know, on my buddy's birthday, I'd give him a call up to, you know, shoot the shit. And, you know, it had been years since we'd seen each other. And I'd finally, you know, been living a productive life, been a productive member of society. And I saved up enough money to actually take a week off from work because I'd get paid vacation. You know, I was going to be able to use it. I was going to be able to buy a plane ticket and fly down to Texas and hang out with him. And 2 days before his birthday, I get a call, you know, that he killed himself. And that fucked with me, you know. I was dumbfounded. I just didn't know what to say. It's just like, what do you say to that? Except it's just this, you know. And, you know, when I thought about it, it's like, I got it. You know, he had mental issues, you know, didn't like to take his meds. So I understand, you know. But I was just so pissed off that I didn't get a chance to say goodbye. You know, that our one last hurrah wasn't really that big of a deal. It was just hanging out in his apartment, you know, shooting the shit. There was no adventure. There was no, like, awesome, like, one last time. That was it. No goodbye. And I thought about it, you know, and I realized that I was actually grateful for the time that I had with him. It wasn't what I wanted. I did not get what I wanted. But the fact was, I got to know this person. He knew me before I got high, while I was getting high, and when I got clean, you know. He partied with me too sometimes, but I don't know how the hell he did it. Sometimes he could put it down, pick it up, put it down. You know, I don't know how he did it, but by his definition, he wasn't an addict, you know, but man, those feelings, it knocked me for a loop. It knocked me for a loop so much that I decided I didn't like, you know, my job, and I found a better opportunity in Virginia. I just packed up and moved, you know, and in essence, I kind of ran away, but, you know, when I moved to Virginia, started doing the same old thing again, except the new job I accepted made me go back to school again. It was a vicious cycle all over again, you know, rebalancing my life, you know, work, more school, more responsibilities. Oh, you know, all this wouldn't have been possible without a higher power either. You know, believing in a God of my understanding was really important. You know, I don't talk a lot about God. Because my God is for me. You know, you may have, you know, a God of a religion. You may have a God of your own understanding. That's for you. You know, I can't explain God, you know, and that's the beauty of it for me. I don't need to understand. All I know is it works for me. You know, it gives me something to look forward to when I'm alone. It feels like I'm never quite alone. You know, before, you know, I worked a second and a third step, I can remember, like, just being isolated or even around people and still feeling utterly alone. Like, yeah. And the God of my understanding is just always by my side. And I know whatever I'm going through, it'll get better. And sometimes it takes work on my end, you know. For me, being able to, you know, recover from my friend's death was going to his funeral. You know, being able to hold his ashes. And he was a messed up guy, so we tried to do the most messed up thing we could do. We took him out to breakfast. We took his urn out to breakfast and sat him at the table as if he was a person. And it was one of the, like, greatest experiences I've had in a long time at that point in time, because we got so many concerned looks. Like, what is that mysterious black Tupperware box with the gold seal on it? Well, you might not want to ask. But, you know, it was wonderful, because I knew that that element, you know, of humor would have done my friend justice. You know, it's not easy going through pain. Sometimes I need to cry. Sometimes I need to yell. I think I should probably invest in a punching bag, you know, because sometimes I just want to hit something, and I don't want to hit a person because I'm afraid, you know, they might hit back and do some damage, and then it's like, you know, and then two people could be hurt, or maybe just me, you know. Oh, there's that crazy thinking again. you know. But the God of my understanding has helped me through a lot. You know, just like my sponsor, you know. Being able to develop a working relationship with my sponsor has helped me with a lot of my feelings, you know. And probably one of the best things that happened from the relationship with my sponsor is he was able to help me accept myself. You know, I never realized that, like, I didn't like myself. You know, I thought I had, like, good qualities and some good characteristics, but I never liked myself. And it was a fantastic feeling one day when I finally felt okay in my own skin. When I felt like I don't need to impress anybody. I just need to be me. You know? What can I say, you know? It's been an interesting journey. It's weight lifted off my shoulders being able to feel that I can act like how I want to be and say what I want to say, you know, as long as it doesn't hurt anybody else. I mean, you know, it feels fantastic that I get to have an immature side, a sense of humor. You know, it's like I still find poop and fart jokes ridiculously hilarious. I mean, I'm immature and I'm okay with it. You know, it's just me. It's like maybe it's not for you. You know, I won't tell you any jokes or anything like that. But I mean, if you got any, sure, bring them my way. I don't know if that's, you know, growing up and then coming to learn. It's just like, you know, I'm a recovering Catholic or something like that. And it's like all that repressed, like, you know, ingraining, like you're going to hell or stuff like that. You know, where that kind of conjured up into my head and like created this weird, twisted, dark sense of humor. But it's whatever. It's like I'm going with it and I feel okay. Yeah. There's I'm gonna wrap it up, but about 2 months ago, it's like I heard this really profound statement. It's probably a quote from the text somewhere. I can't figure where I pulled it up, but man, when this person shared it, it just resonated so much with me. And it's just like, you know, that's another tool to put in my recovery bag. But you know, the gentleman stated, you know, illuminating our dark past is one of our greatest assets. And to me, that means being open-minded, honest, and not living in the past, you know. Letting that shame and guilt, you know, that I've acquired over the years, recently, whenever, letting it go. Not carrying that excess of baggage around with me because it weighs me down. It makes me feel terrible. It makes me feel less than, unequal to, inferior, you know. And it's not healthy. It's not spiritual, you know. And that leads me, when I start feeling like that, leads me to start to resent myself. And resentments aren't good. So I gotta let that stuff go, you know. And today it's like, you know, I don't have secrets. I try to be transparent. I try to be open-minded and honest, and it feels great. You know, in the past, you know, I used to tell so many lies. It's like I wouldn't be able to, like, I started to forget what was a lie and what was truth, you know. It's a lot of work. It's so much easier just to be truthful and forthcoming, you know. Oh. And all I can say before I turn it over to Ron is, you know, keep coming back. You know, if you're going through a tough time, just remember this too will pass. You know, there's people in the rooms, maybe not this one, but somewhere, who have probably experienced the same thing that I've experienced or that you've experienced, you know. Get with them. They can help you through. That's how I've been able to be helped, one day at a time, by opening up and sharing my fears, my inadequacies, my deep, dark, you know, fears with other people, but just laying it out. And my God, does it ever feel relieving, you know? Carrying around that excess baggage just weighs me down. I'm happy to be clean today. I love you all. If you want a hug, see me after the meeting. Thanks.